My name is Greg Listoka. I'm a professor at Rutgers School of Law in Camden, and I have prepared remarks as well to submit to the committee. First, I want to thank this committee and the National Academies for undertaking this valuable and important project and for giving me the opportunity to be heard on this issue. This committee is staffed with a stellar set of experts on copyright law and economics. The members of this committee know copyright law very well, and just as a preliminary issue, that's actually part of my concern. Because the task here is not so much to know what copyright law is or what it has been and how that's been created, but whether copyright law is working today to do what it needs to do. And that's a very different question. And I think it's a question that has been recently framed in the wrong terms often. I think everyone believes correctly that the internet has created substantial problems for copyright. And we're repeatedly told that copyright is in a moment of technological crisis, and I think that that is correct. But in my opinion, the technological crisis for copyright law has little to do with internet-based piracy. Piracy is occurring today, yet my intuition is that we had art and culture before we had copyright, and we will continue to have art and culture despite piracy. We've continued to have piracy. We've had piracy for a long time. The entertainment industry has historically adapted to new technological changes, and the creative destruction of past business models is actually, I think, healthy for technological progress, for economic progress, and for cultural progress. And it seems to me that the serious copyright problem that we have today is not about piracy, per se, but about legitimacy. As Professor James Ginsberg has observed, copyright law today has gotten a pretty bad name for itself among the public. And the public perception of copyright law's legitimacy matters because the public is increasingly involved today, due to our technological changes, in the process of copyright. In recent years, as the committee knows well, the copyright industries have taken the unprecedented step of suing consumers for making personal use copies of creative works. At the same time, the rhetoric of digital piracy has fueled expansion of copyright owner entitlements, including new criminal provisions and troubling technological regulations found in Section 1201 of the DMCA. Though a piratical public is increasingly the villain, I think, in some of this copyright rhetoric, the fact is that the public, and some of the speakers before have mentioned this, has only the vaguest sense of the mandates of copyright law. As average citizens are sued for copyright infringement and made to worry about the legality of their daily actions using these technologies, I think they're becoming more curious about what copyright law says. But as everyone knows, if you read the statute as an average citizen, it's largely incomprehensible. It seems as if Title 17 is a complicated contractual compromise between specific industry players, and that may well be the case. But more importantly, I think when the public is threatened with infringement liability, they want to know not just what the letter of copyright law is, what rules govern their actions, but why we have copyright law, what public purpose it serves. And that, I think, is where we have a copyright crisis with regard to digital technologies and the internet. Copyright law's ostensible purpose is to provide the public with access to knowledge and learning and creative works, and to use the constitutional term, right, to promote the progress of science. In passing, I should note that it's not designed to safeguard the profits associated with certain late 20th century entertainment industry business practices or models. If we appreciate the historic purpose of copyright law, we can appreciate that any technophobic response to the internet would be precisely backwards. Today, the average citizen has at their disposal technologies needed to create valuable creative works in a variety of genres. Authorial amateurs, and by the term amateurs, I mean creators working outside the economic models that we traditionally associate with copyright in the content industries. Creators and authors are producing a long tail of creative works in bewildering varieties. This is user-generated content, as it's sometimes called, but it's author-generated content, really. So, anecdotally, carpenters and electricians are offering primers on home improvement projects. People struggling with health challenges are pooling their wisdom and collective knowledge about resources. Amateur photographers, artists, programmers, videographers are making contribution to the network's information wealth. They're pursuing non-traditional economic models of copyright, but these are all authors creating new works. As a result of all of this creative production, today's citizen has an unprecedented ability to access whatever it is he or she needs to know in order to do whatever it is he or she needs to know in order to act, to do whatever it is he or she needs to do. So my children find it natural, entirely natural, to go to Google to find out how to build a catapult, how to research the history of Aikido, how to see pictures of hybrid fruit trees. And creative commercial industries used to supply that sort of information to the public. Yet, commercial content is being increasingly displaced by free access content available on the web. And I don't think that that is a bad thing. And I should stress, as you know, that open access content is not antithetical to copyright. These new amateur creative works are fully protected by the copyright laws. Yet, although they fall within the ambit of copyright law, they deliver their economic value to the public in a sphere that is premised on the freedom of consumers, of the public, to copy. I should also stress that there's a significant economic dimension to open access content. Companies like Google and Facebook and other aggregators have built their profits on the value of this sort of free access, sometimes called user-generated, content. These for-profit platforms index and organize amateur contributions to our information wealth in ways that the public finds useful and that these companies find profitable. The free access sphere of copyright is not devoid of problems and policy concerns. Yet, from the standpoint of innovation and access to knowledge, the free access sphere needs to be recognized as a frankly miraculous development that delivers on the essential goals of copyright law. So I would suggest that reforms to copyright law should serve rather than curb the technological revolution that has brought us to this place, and that the law should encourage works of amateur authors who are contributing to the public knowledge. It should not take away their tools. It should not attempt to tame the internet. The copyright law should embrace these new technologies. So in closing, the primary question I think that the committee needs to consider is whether copyright law today serves the public welfare by furthering the progress of science. The rhetoric of copyright reform in recent years has cast the internet as a technology of infringement and the average citizen as a potential infringer. And I think that needs to be turned around entirely so we can see the average citizen as a potential author and the internet as fulfilling the fulfilling copyright law's wildest dreams of public access to knowledge. If we want to fix the law, the last thing we should do is encourage any changes that hobble these technologies. in order to serve business models that may be being displaced by the free access sphere. Instead, I think we need a copyright law that our most important authors, or the general public, can understand, can endorse, and can enjoy. Thank you again, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
I have three questions, Greg, and I'll state them as quickly as I can. Two are about sources of data. Can you point us to data in your work or work of others on two questions that are raised by your remarks? One, the state of public opinion about copyright, and two, the magnitude of this free access sphere that you've discussed. And then one substantive question. I'm curious, as an expert on amateur creativity, whether you have reactions to this idea of shifting to the extent we can to a more opt-in copyright system. That might mean that lots of amateur creativity is out of the system, which you could imagine arguments that that's good or bad for amateur creators.
Right. On the question of public opinion, you know, that isn't... I can do what I can and find things that I can send to the committee on that issue. I'd be happy to do that. That's... I think it's a good question. On that the committee needs to look at. On the question of the value of free access content, the thing that, you know, concerns me is that we're trying to find numbers about these things, right? The economic value of being able to immediately know, you know, how to fix a home improvement problem is something that is so, you know, disaggregated across the population that it's very hard to capture the economic value of that. The economic value of the web is immense and incredible, right? And we know the companies built on that economic value have incredible market wealth. But it's awfully hard to move that down to say, you know, if there were a putative sale of the information available on the web, what would that number look like and how has that contributed to innovation? So I will endeavor to get the committee whatever I can find on those two particular questions. I realize that looking for data is your goal, and I'm just trying to focus to the extent you can to argue for a focus on this free access content. With regard to the opt-in system, I'm generally supportive of the introduction of formalities. But again, with the public that is creating new content that is largely unaware of what copyright law demands, I feel that there is a desire among the public to obtain certain benefits with regard to the work that they produce. And one of those benefits is attribution of authorship. And that's what we see as being the dominant form in Creative Commons. And that's what we see as the dominant norm on internet creativity. And I think it's ironic that in terms of compliance with Berne, it's the moral rights provisions, the attribution provisions of Berne's that we are actually out of compliance with and that actually the public seems to desire. So if we shift to an opt-in system for copyright, I would worry with regard to amateur creativity that some of the things that authors expect would be denied to them if they entirely lost protection of the law with regard to their works.
Greg, it's Chris Sprigman.
Hi, Chris.
I'm interested in whether you can point us to any research that even catalogs the kinds of things that we don't measure. You mentioned before the person who has a home improvement problem and immediately finds information about how to deal with that on the web. Now, I can imagine that creating value. I can imagine lots of things like that that might create value that we don't measure. Just to begin to get some traction on measuring the costs and benefits of the copyright system, do we have any way to at least list some important things that we don't measure?
I think that's a question for economists, and I know that people like Brett Fishman, Kathy Strandberg are looking at the, you know, kind of commons infrastructure aspects of intellectual property and copyright. So the first people I would turn to would probably be them, and the other research that's being done on the economic dimensions of, for instance, open source software. It's a tricky issue, and I'm not a specialist in economics. I'm aware that there's value there, but it's very hard for me to quantify it. I'll do what I can to provide resources to the committee.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.